I've seen this movie before, that one ends in tears. I can tell you exactly what happened.
It's early days.
They don't get it, and they don't seem to care.
Why didn't you tell us about that before? What was he hiding?
A government that is bitterly divided.
We've got to raise the standards of journalism a little bit here.
Hello, everybody. This is The Party Room. You've arrived. We've arrived. Welcome. I'm Patricia Carvelis from RN Drive.
And I'm Frank Kelly from RN Breakfast. And this is our grand finale for the year, for season 2017, the parliamentary year about to wrap up. In fact, PK, we've waited and waited and waited, waded through endless speeches and amendments. We can wait no longer. We've got to get this podcast out. But we are, as we speak, on the brink of a vote to legalise same-sex marriage.
That's right. Later in this episode, David Spears is dropping by to help us close off the final week of Parliament. It has been an enormous week, Fran. You know, beyond this issue of same-sex marriage, citizenship, you know, foreign donation laws, espionage, this has been an absolute corker. He's the political editor of Sky News Australia. But as you say, we are now on the cusp of a vote. And when people listen, we're recording this Thursday afternoon, but I think these laws would have passed. We've been watching it in the Parliament, but we've also, obviously, this debate has gone on for the last week.
It's been a very strange week because we thought it was going to be this politically charged week, and there's been real changes of tempo through the week. You know, in the background has been the same-sex marriage debate. Then it flared up into the foreign intervention, foreign spy, Sam Dastyari thing. That dropped off. The citizenship debate flared up. Still, they keep talking into the wee hours of the morning about same-sex marriage. And now, on this final sitting day for this year, same-sex marriage is the story because history is about to be made.
What's been really fascinating, I think, to watch is that all of the amendments on religious freedom have been defeated so far pretty comprehensively, and it looks like that's a trend, because crucial MPs on the government side, just to name a few, Kelly O'Dwyer on the front bench,
Christopher Pyne,
that's right, have, you know, sided with lots of Labor MPs, because that's part of the criticism of Conservatives, that Labor has voted as a bloc to ensure that the laws pass. And in all of the speeches I've watched, Terry Butler, for instance, who is the equality spokesperson for Labor and has played a pretty leading role in the debate, she has argued against amendments on, you know, some of the detail, but also on process, that if you make these amendments get up, that the bill will be changed substantially, perhaps have to go back to the Senate. And she said, one of her quotes I thought was quite powerful was, you're going to break the nation's heart. People are ready for this to go through. And remember, it was the Prime Minister, Fran, that said this bill will sail through the Parliament.
So it was also the Prime Minister who said after he lost the referendum, he was leading the Republican vote on the referendum, and he accused John Howard the next day of breaking the nation's heart. So it's a phrase that resonates very strongly, I'd imagine, with Malcolm Turnbull.
Yeah, and some of the speeches, because of course it's been in the lower house, so the speeches have been, until we got to this amendment period, it's all been these sort of keynote speeches from people on this issue. Some of them have been just incredible, absolutely incredible speeches, really moving.
The discussion was over. We were about to move to the next item on the agenda. And in a very soft, gentle, but clearly audible voice, Penny just uttered the words, "Say black instead of gay, and hear how it sounds."
I support marriage equality as someone who has and has had loved ones who identify as LGBTQI. To them, marriage equality would mean so much. I honour these people, and in particular, my late son, Binny.
Linda Burney, Indigenous MP, her son recently died, really tragic period of her life. I mean, her resilience is amazing. If she's listening to this, I don't know how she does it, but she is a very, very strong woman. People revealing, other MPs, you know, that they have gay children. In fact, that was a bit of a theme. Lane Saintie, I'll give, you know, hats off to Lane, who's been a great reporter throughout this for BuzzFeed, but she wrote about the MPs who are parents of gays and lesbians, which was interesting. You know, we often think about the individuals, the Tim Wilsons who proposed to his partner and others, but there are other layers, there are other people who are very affected by this issue.
And that's been the key to the vote, I think, and that's the key to the Yes campaign's strategy all along on this. You know, Tiernan Brady, who's a big marriage equality campaigner throughout this, they brought him across from Ireland because of experience with the referendum there, and his message there was, keep it to love, okay? Go and talk to your grandma. If you're gay, go and talk to your grandma. Go and talk to your mum and dad. Go and talk to your brothers and sisters. because it's you who will change their minds. And that's what we've seen in the votes in this chamber. MP after MP, senator after senator stand up and said, my son is gay, my daughter is gay, my brother is gay. And they're affected by the personal story. And once you bring it home to the person, it's harder to vote for inequality. Mm. I think that's been the key to this campaign, and we're hearing it play out in these speeches.
Also fascinating because it's a conscience vote issue. To watch people just, you know, at every division, every time that there has to be a vote, them crossing in different ways, in different manifestations. I find that really fascinating to watch, you know, Josh Frydenberg split off from other conservatives on some amendments, Christian Porter.
The Prime Minister came in for some and didn't come in for others.
Yeah, so really fascinating kind of different ways that they have voted on this. But consistently, it seems to me as a strategy, what I've noticed, and I know it's been reported on, is that there was a core group of MPs that made a decision to just vote against the amendments to get this through. And so you saw this quite a significant margin where they were ahead, where they were defeating these amendments, and lots of talk about this religious review, and many MPs saying, we've got a process for this. It's this review, the Ruddock review. We need to pass these laws.
Don't forget, PK, the Prime Minister said we will get this done by Christmas. Christopher Pyne is really his Praetorian Guard in the reps. You can see it. He's marshalling the numbers. He's marshalling to make sure the amendments do get voted down so that this bill doesn't get changed, so it will be done for Christmas. Politically, that is very important. It's not just important to all those Australians who want it done now and already think the politicians have taken too long. It's important because Malcolm Turnbull said this will be done for Christmas. I think we really should remember, once this is done, this vote is cast and it is legal, that it is really the strength and drive of individuals, particularly Senators Dean Smith, Senators Penny Wong. It was in the Senate that this was driven, and they are the ones, I think, that will get the biggest cheer at the end of this.
I would say some low moments too. Bob Katter gave a speech that I think was, you know, roundly been kind of criticised, you know, quite offensive, and I think most people would find it offensive. So, you know, not always highs with this debate. But in terms of the public gallery, I just want to mention what we've watched. And I think this is incredible. I'm not a photographer, but you'll see the pictures. I'm sure you've already seen them. But Ian Thorpe in the gallery, Magda in the gallery, lots of children of gays and lesbians who have been really helping their parents campaign and have been crucial in this campaign, little kids. And can I just say, if your kids were in the gallery, your kids are so much better behaved than mine.
Yeah, I know, they're incredible.
Mine would be like, Mum, I'm bored.
That's what I was going to say. All these people have been sitting there for hours and hours and hours while these amendments have been pumped through. And I really wish the politicians would look up and say, you know what, you people have been waiting for this, we're just going to give it to you, and stop talking. Talk, talk, talk. I really think the moment for talking by the politicians was over quite a few days ago. The public's voted. The politicians should have gotten on with it by now.
Well, they set up a system which was all about the public vote, didn't they? So as soon as they did that, that's right. It's going to be interesting, though, just in terms of, you know, this is a political podcast, just to mention how this will be now viewed historically.
I was just going to say, what do we think the politics of this is for Malcolm Turnbull? Because he wants to claim this as his win, as his legacy. If he gets the vote, is that a big win for Malcolm Turnbull at the end of 2017?
Yeah, look, it's a hard one to call. Politically, I think it is a win for him, politically. But that's not to discount the experiences of many people I know, my own friends, people very close to me who found that campaign very difficult. And I'm not going to dismiss their feelings. Mm. I think their feelings are genuine. I mean, you know, if you're a 15-year-old gay kid, having to endure that campaign, that matters, that experience matters in this country, and we need to not forget that. Equally, the Prime Minister has a very difficult party room. That's the reality he lives with. He's found a pathway. It might not be a pathway people have liked, but it's a pathway to deliver on a reform that he supports. When he says he's the first Prime Minister who's always been in favour of same-sex marriage for a very long time, he's actually right.
And in the end, you know, it's so interesting. The public vote came in around, what was it, 62%, pretty much bang on where all the published polls had been for the last year or so. We really didn't need that survey to tell us what the Australian people wanted, but
it's happened, it's finished, and it's over, Red Rover. Hey, should we bring our guest in?
Let's do it. David Spears, can't wait. David Spears, it's so great to have you at the party.
My two favourite radio presenters. It's an honour to be here.
Do you say that to all radio presenters?
No, only you two.
Well, you are one of my favourite television hosts. I don't want to be mean to any of your colleagues. Let's talk about the big issues. Citizenship, citizenship, citizenship. Of course, the same-sex marriage laws, historic day, passing the parliament. But really, the other huge issue this week has been the revelations and the declarations. And it's a bit of a stalemate.
It is a stalemate. And look, the worm really turned this week, didn't it, on this one, putting a lot of embarrassment back on the Labor side after all the, you know, guarantees there were no problems from Bill Shorten over some months now. Well, clearly there are. But yeah, we've reached a stalemate. And the government, you know, on this doesn't have the numbers. It wasn't able to. I think it's interesting the Prime Minister wasn't able to get just one of the five crossbenchers to back him on referring those Labor MPs individually. Instead, they went as a block with Labor to say no, only if four of those Liberals go. I think there's a stronger case for the Labor MPs to be referred. They are, three of them, in exactly the same situation as Katie Gallagher. But anyway, look, you know, the government's view is she now becomes the test case in terms of, you know, whether not getting your renunciation confirmation until after the nomination date was good enough. So if she's gone, if she's found by the High Court to be ineligible, the other three will have to go. But if she's fine to stay, well, the other three are fine to stay.
I think you're right. There is a stronger case. But the reason the crossbench went with Labor and tried to get the whole block of MPs done at one time, including, I think it was four on the coalition side, which the government resisted and just had just squeaked in with enough votes to hold it off, was because the crossbenchers, I think, are very plugged in to what the electorate is feeling, which is, could you just get this done and dusted.
Yeah, and I think the electorate probably thinks if there's a question mark over anyone, it's got to be tested. It's got to be tested. Now, I think in the case of Jason Falinski, there probably is a bit of a question mark there. I think the two with Greek heritage, Julia Banks and Alex Hawke, they have a letter from the Greek embassy. Now, Labor's view seems to be, well, you know, can you really trust that? The Greeks
But at
really...
what point? Surely a letter is good enough.
Exactly.
I think it's pretty obvious evidence, isn't it? It's a letter from
the
country saying
you're not one of ours.
It's pretty clear.
But anyway, you can see why Labor wants to rope as many Liberals into this as they can. Bottom line, look, this will drag into next year. The High Court won't be back till I think it's mid-February. Then, you know, how long they take to deal with these, we don't know. If it goes against Katie Gallagher, the other three Labor MPs in the lower house would have to go. Then you'd have to set by-election dates. Then, we're looking at this going on for months, aren't we?
We're looking at this going on for months. We're also looking at where once it was thought that, oh, Super Saturday, the by-elections, this is going to be trouble for Malcolm Turnbull. He only holds government by one seat. He could lose it. Au contraire, I mean, who's looking vulnerable here? Are these Labor seats.
Labor really overreached on this. They went on and on about how their processes were amazing. You know, you're not going to get us caught up. David Feeney, Katie Gallagher, both on their way to the High Court.
Yeah, and David Feeney's a particular embarrassment, I think, for Labor. Has been in the past. He forgot that he had a $2.3 million investment property. Now he's forgotten, it seems, whether or not he might have renounce British citizenship. So that seat is very vulnerable, Batman, to the Greens. They came within a whisker at the last election, had a terrific candidate there who had appeal.
I don't think Dave Feeney would win that seat back in the
by-election. Well, I don't think he's going to either.
No,
and that's why
over Red Rover.
That's why no one in Labor will say that he should be the candidate. I mean, that's quite telling, right? That there's obviously a lot of thought being given to running someone else.
I disagree with the Labor overreach thing a bit. In terms of these ones that, you know, didn't get the stamp in time, I have some sympathy because I think that was the general understanding. It's different to the government ones. They didn't even try
Although,
to renounce
Although I would say
this.
With some of the, like Josh Wilson is one of those Labor MPs. When he was pre-selected, he put the form in to renounce his citizenship. Yeah. The others were pre-selected the year before. Why, when they were pre-selected, didn't they lodge a form and say, I want to renounce British citizenship? They left it until a few weeks before.
Well, Katie Gallagher was 9 weeks, I think.
Well, Katie Gallagher came into the parliament clearly as a dual citizen in the last term. Did she
Let's
take
face it, everyone's
steps?
Been sprung, haven't
but
they?
But either way, yeah, it's a pox on both their houses. Yeah. Labor has lost the high moral ground here. And of course, the other big story of the week was the government unveiling its changes on foreign donations, espionage, huge changes actually, significant. And at the centre of that story, still an attack on Sam Dastyari and his, I suppose, whether it's viable for Labor to keep hanging on to him as a senator. They have so far. They've said, we've demoted him from everything, but, you know, he's going to remain an ALP senator.
Yeah, and look, fair enough going after Sam Dastyari. This is an appalling mess that he has brought Labor to. And I think a casual observer would probably think all these foreign interference laws announced this week were timed just to get Labor over Sam Dastyari. Reality is these have been worked on, I'm told, since May by the Attorney General. And these are substantial changes. And I think they've been fairly warmly received by people who know know what the problems are when it comes to attempts at foreign interference.
These are laws that were put in place really because the intelligence agencies said we need to tighten up these laws. But there's no doubt the timing of this was just brought forward a few days to give them a chance.
That's probably right.
To appoint to Sam Dastyari.
That's
because
right.
The
even
timing
though they
was
keep
politically
saying,
very expedient.
Well, they keep saying it's not about China, it's not about Senator Dastyari and this particular businessman. But then in the next answer, they make mention of Sam Dastyari.
Yeah, and didn't it earn a rebuke from China? I mean, they put out a very rare statement, the Chinese embassy hopping into journalists, but also politicians and government officials in Australia, you know, for peddling falsehoods, they said. But look, even the Attorney General has said this week, this is a problem that's beyond political donations. There's political interference and influence within the major political parties that's growing to the point where he indicated that some have even infiltrated the Labor Party in particular. He won't say whether they've wound up in Parliament or in local councils, but I think that's the clear inference that he's making. That is very serious
stuff.
I mean,
he basically said as much. Mm. And I think Australians listening to that go, what?
Exactly.
And it's an extraordinary
this
statement.
Is extraordinary. I know citizenship has overshadowed all of this week, but this is a pretty serious accusation, revelation, and pretty serious steps the government's now taking to tackle all this.
Can we just talk about the Sam Dastyari issue for a moment? Because Labor says, well, he's taken his punishment, he's sit there, nothing you can do to kick him out. But should there be more questions being asked? Should there be some sort of inquiry around the allegations here?
Well, there's been no explanation from Sam Dastyari or Bill Shorten about the crux of this. Why was he suggesting that phones be left inside so they can talk outside? Who knew what? You know, all these questions that he's raised over the years that are pro-China questions to defence and foreign affairs officials. You know, no explanation has been given around this, in my view. There needs to be. And, you know, he's hardly been punished. What was he? Deputy whip in the Senate on a few committees. I think, you know, there's still a question mark over Sam Dastyari's political future. He holds a plum position as the on the Senate ticket for the New South Wales right in the Labor Party. Can they really keep someone like Sam Dastyari, who frankly cannot serve as a minister, I would say?
Well, they've rehabilitated him once over the same issues, let's be honest. There might be more revelations now, but the same issues.
Can you imagine them
doing
it again?
No. Well, clearly some people think it's possible, and I think questions have to be asked of those people as well. You know, how can you, third time lucky? I don't think so.
I can't see it. And, you know, how would the intelligence and defence community feel about Sam Dastyari sitting around a National Security Committee table?
Now, last week was a very bad week for Malcolm Turnbull. I think most people would agree with that. His position seemed perilous. I mean, really, there was talk and chatter about his whether he'd make it through the killing season. But this week, a lot turned around. Of course, Barnaby Joyce won the New England by-election. And then the Prime Minister, you know, he was overwhelmed with happiness. I've never seen him beaming like that. And he wasn't faking the smile this time. This was a really genuine smile. Here he is on Sunday Agenda on Sky.
I'm so thrilled that we're getting Barnaby back. We're getting the band back together. Or the people of New England have done that.
The band back together.
Love to hear that band.
The band. I'm not sure that I want to hear that band, but I am interested in that band. Who's going to be the lead singer from now on? Because because Barnaby's super majority really, you know, gave Malcolm Turnbull a platform to not just smile, but he's a confidence player and he was very confident, had a good week this week. But what does it mean going forward, David? Because is Malcolm Turnbull going to have the sort of a golden handcuff here now to Barnaby Joyce and be even more indebted to the Nats?
Yeah, look, I thought it was a really good look for both of them, but particularly for Malcolm Turnbull to be there on the Saturday night when that big win came in for Barnaby Joyce. Malcolm Turnbull does have a problem in connecting with a lot of real Australians, as they say. Barnaby Joyce can help with that. I think he needs to be seen spending more time with him, you know, mixing with people. All of that's good. How much will this give the Nats, I guess, encouragement to go harder on some of the things? You know, they've been emboldened by wins on the Royal Commission into the banks, for example. You know, there's been agitation at Turnbull in particular while Barnaby was away. I think that's died down.
Are they going to feel that Malcolm owes them?
Well, probably. And, you know, you've got a new leadership team now in Barnaby Joyce and Bridget McKenzie from Victoria. Mm. I do think they're going to be, you know, flexing some muscle. But look, I'm not convinced that's going to be such a bad thing for the government as it tries to fight off the likes of One Nation in some regional areas.
Look, it's a week-to-week proposition, though. It's moving so fast. You know, the Nats were about to walk away, Royal Commission last week. Now, of course, the Prime Minister looks like he's got a bit of his mojo back, but it could just swing around quite quickly.
Yeah, he's been in survival mode, and he's survived.
Well,
right, to the end of the year.
Well, survive for now. We've got a by-election coming up.
Been along.
You would think you would think, given the events of the last couple of weeks, Sam Dastyari, the citizenship issue flipping around onto Labor, this is all going to help John Alexander, you would think, on the ground.
You think you're going to get your colleague Christina Keneally back?
I don't know about that. I don't know about that. The odds are that John Alexander is going to get over the line. It's not going to be easy for him, though. I still think it's going to be a tight contest. But any sort of win now for the Libs and for Malcolm Turnbull will be...
Well, a win's a win, but a by-election, you don't want to swing against you more than 5%, do you, if you're the Prime Minister?
No, you don't. But boy, when the polls are where they are...
They just take it and bank it.
If they just win, bank you that. Take it and you bank it. But it doesn't take much to stir up criticism of Turnbull's leadership and try and bring him down again. So look, he's never going to be out of that sort of...
That's how he lives now.
That's how he lives.
It's been a massive year in federal politics, David. Foolish to predict what might happen in 2018. We've made predictions before and been wrong. Well, I speak for myself anyway. But what are you anticipating? Is there one moment, one thing you're looking at?
I hate to say it, but the citizenship issue is going to dominate a lot of the first half of next year, particularly if we do head into a Super Saturday of by-elections. You know, hang on to your hats. This could change everything. So that's going to be the big focus, I think, for the start of next year. Look, clearly, Malcolm Turnbull wants to get the focus back onto his achievements and big things that are rolling out next year, whether it's childcare changes, Gonski school funding,
energy. Oh, remember energy.
Yeah,
energy.
But energy and tax are the two big policy areas. Now, how they manage to deliver some income tax cuts before the next election and also maintain company tax cuts in the budget at least, I'm puzzled as to how they do that and keep the budget on track to return to surplus. That's going to be interesting to see how they manage that. Whether they go for broader tax reform, you know, the GST, they won't do that. It's very politically tough. But boy, that's where I think Turnbull first
stumbled.
Lost it.
That's where he stumbled.
He squibbed it on the tax reform. Yep. So whether they get back into that, the energy, national energy guarantee, as you say, is going to be a big one. They've still got to land that with the states. They're getting there. But I think that's going to be a real test for Josh Frydenberg in particular, a big one to watch. But politically, clearly, the pressure is going to stay on Turnbull. He's got plenty of enemies who are going to make sure of that. They've got to get through this citizenship mess and try and keep their grip on government. That's the main game.
David Spears, great guest. Thank you very much for joining us. Have a happy Christmas.
You too. Thanks for having me.
I have really enjoyed having you, David. Can you come again?
Of course.
See ya.
All right.
It's time for Trading Preferences. Fran, where are your preferences going?
Well, PK, you might have caught the fact that Milo Yiannopoulos is here. He's that controversial alt-right figure, and he's here on a bit of a celebrity speaking tour, saying some outrageous things, you know, trotting out the old feminism is cancer line. Well, Liberal MP Jane Hume was asked about him and some of his comments, and I just loved her response. It was an absolute classic. Listen to this.
Quite frankly, I don't know why this is a headline in Canberra today. You know, young man swaggers into Canberra, attention-seeking, saying outrageous things and appeasing the far right and getting some media coverage. Sounds like the Coalition Party Room.
Did you get that? Oh. Sounds like the Coalition Party Room.
She's a comic genius, this woman.
PK, what was your favourite moment of the week?
Oh, look, I know it's a bit corny, but I'm allowed to be corny. You know, historic week, historic moment for Australia. It was this moment.
This debate has been the soundtrack to our relationship. We both know this issue isn't the reason we got involved in politics. Give us tax reform any day. But in my first speech, I defined our bond by the ring that sits on both of our left hands, and that they are the answer to the questions we cannot ask. So there's only one thing left to do. Ryan Patrick Bolger, will you marry me?
Tim
does
Wilson.
Does bring a tear to the eye, doesn't it?
Yeah, it was a pretty special moment. Tim Wilson proposing to his partner, you know, gay MP. He's been pretty loud voice in this debate. But I thought it was one of those moments that you don't see. It was history making because we've never had a proposal either.
It went around the world.
Of course it
that
did.
News.
Of course it did. And you know, I actually interviewed him after Fran and he didn't. You know, a lot of people thought, some people accused him of being an attention seeker. And he said, I wasn't. It has been the soundtrack to our relationship, this debate. So actually, there was nothing more natural than asking that question. Anyway, I thought it was one of those lovely moments after a very difficult period for a lot of gay people.
On that note, and what a lovely note to end on, we are ending for the year. The Party Room's going to be out of your feeds for a while over the summer break. Don't be alarmed. When Parliament's sitting again, we'll be here back to tell you all about it.
Well, have you got any recommendations for me, Fran? What should I do over summer?
I'll tell you what I'm going to do over summer. I'm going to make sure I get tickets to see Muriel's Wedding, the musical. I'm a big musical tragic myself. I've been too busy to get there. I just can't wait to go and see Muriel's Wedding.
I am going to finish reading Anne of Green Gables to my 8-year-old because I get through a couple of pages and then I'm like, let's go to bed now. I'm going to finish Anne of Green Gables. It is such a good book.
I hear there's a great Netflix series of it too.
First we finish the book, then we go on to the Netflix series. All right. In the meantime, though, don't forget to tweet at us using the hashtag ThePartyRoom. Don't forget to email us to thepartyroom@abc.net.au. We will miss you. We want to hear from you. I mean, I'll harass you on every social media network I can. I'm not going to go offline. Can't help myself.
You won't be offline, no matter how good the summer is. Actually, PK, there is one more Party Room to come for the year. I'm calling it our Party Room bonus track. Next Thursday, we're going to put out Year of Review in Song.
Oh, yes. Bonus. I'm very much looking forward to that bonus. And I have enjoyed the increasing narrative in your songs, Fran. I'm just going to give you a bit of credit there. They do tell a story.
Bit of a rewrite.
I like it. The quotes, the story. I can't wait. Make sure that you download that next week because we're going to have a little break, but we will be back next year. Before we go, Fran, you've got one more song for the year. What is it?
Well, always squeeze out one more song. Look, we didn't think we'd be seeing this song this week, to be honest, BK. We thought it would be, you know, maybe another song. But I want you to picture the Prime Minister as Gloria Gaynor. I Will Survive.
I don't want to do that. I don't want to picture that, but I want to hear the song. Let's hear it. See you, Fran.
See you, PK. At first I was afraid, I was petrified. Kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights thinking how you did me wrong. And I grew strong. And I learned how to get along. You're on my back, you're in my face. I just walked in to find you here with that bad look on your face. I should have changed that stupid law. I should have made you toe the line. If I'd known for just one second you'd be back to take what's mine. Go on now, go. Walk out the door. Just turn around now. 'Cause you're not welcome anymore. Weren't you the one who tried to hurt me with goodbye? Did you think I'd crumble? Did you think I'd lay down and die? Oh no, not I. I will survive. Oh, as long as I know how to lead, I know I'll stay alive. I've got all my life to live. I've got all my love to give. I'll survive. I will survive. Hey, hey, hey.
I'm so thrilled that we're getting Barnaby back. We're getting the band back together. This is a very, very big result.
Hey, hey, now go. Walk out the door. Just turn around now. 'Cause you're not welcome anymore. Weren't you the one who tried to haunt me with goodbye? Did you think I'd crumble? Did you think I'd lay down and die? Oh no, not I will survive. Yes, as long as I know how to lead, I know I'll stay alive. I've got all my life to live. I've got all my love to give. I'll survive. I will survive.
I have every confidence that I will lead the coalition to the next election in 2019, and we will win it.
Thank you.